Amen. Well, we've got a guest speaker today, and some of you, Brother Mensick, you want to stand up here for a moment so they can look at you. This is Dr. Jan Mensick. He's a neurosurgeon and a medical doctor, but also a theologian. And he's just got back from the Middle East with on a trip with Chuck Missler, and he's going to share with you some of the things that he saw over there in the Middle East. It's we live in an exciting time. The sin is rampant. It just overcomes us as we walk out every day. But also, we live in a lamp link, a period of time that we're about the end of the church age and about starting into the tribulation period. And of course, we don't want to be there, do we? And we want to be caught up and snatched away in the twinkling of an eye, it says, and taken up to be with the Lord. But Brother Mensick went over there in the Middle East, and you saw some astonishing things, and he's going to tell you about some of that. Brother.
Welcome, all of you.
I want you all to take your Bibles and hold them up.
But before you hold them up, I want you to put your fingers around the Old Testament and hold the Old Testament.
And hold it up. Hold the Old Testament. I want you to hold it up and repeat after me.
I believe
that this is the Word of God.
I believe in everything it says.
I believe the Old Testament is applicable today.
I believe that the gospel is in the Old Testament.
I'm going to read a few things from Ezekiel 36, 37, 38. All right. My version is a version by Peterson, so it's paraphrased, so it gives a little bit different view. Verse 36. Therefore prophesy over the land of Israel, preach to the mountains, the hills, every ditch and valley, the message of God. Master, look, listen, I am angry and I care. I'm speaking to you because you've been humiliated among the nations. Therefore, I, God the Master, am telling you that I have solemnly sworn the nations around you that it's their turn to be humiliated.
Verse 37.
Chapter 37. 37 starts with the dry bones vision. I'm sure most of you are familiar with that. Therefore prophesy, tell them, God, the Master says, I'll dig up your graves and bring you out alive, O my people. Then I'll take you straight to the land of Israel, where when I dig up your graves and bring you out as a people, you will realize that I am God. I'll breathe my life into you, and you'll live. Then I'll lead you straight back to your land, and you'll realize that I am God. I've said it, and this I'll do. It's God's decree.
Chapter 38.
This is the message. God's message came to me. Son of man, confront God from the country of Magog, head of Meshach and Tubal, and prophesy against him.
I just spent 2 weeks over in Israel,
and I want to preface my comments by several caveats, all right? I've spent 2 weeks seeing probably more sensitive and unique things and secret things than most people will ever see in their lifetime. Because of some unique situations, I've been very, very blessed. What I'm going to say is all my views and no one else's. Okay? And number two, the second thing I want to just bring to you, I believe that the Ezekiel 38 and 39 is not the same as the Armageddon scenario. So I just sort of add that preamble to tell you where I'm coming from. Those 2 weeks, I've talked to members of Knesset, people from the Mossad, been briefed by the general who said in September 6th invasion into Syria that they did. Some stuff has been on secret sites, all sorts of things. Have learned more than I probably would ever know. I want to talk to you about what I see is happening in the Middle East today from my perspective. 7 years ago, I was over there. The first thing that I noticed different, 7 years ago, it was just before the start of the Intifada,
If you went on the Temple Mount, the Muslim walk was very, they were still very accommodating. They were pleasant to deal with. Today, the Muslim walk is angry and vicious and hardened, totally different than 7 years ago. The second thing is that there's a totally different view among the people that I've seen in the country of Israel, in the cities and in the countryside. The Israelis are much more relaxed than they have been for many, many years. All right, they've been through the Intifada, it so goes on, but they have come to deal with it. They are doing things to help it, things like the walls, stuff like that. Right now, we are, I believe, living just right before Ezekiel 38 and 39. I strongly believe that. What I'm going to talk about is sort of the geopolitical things that are happening right now and give you some insights into why things, the thinking of what's going on that you may not think of and have understood this way before. The first thing I want you to think about, how many have heard that Israel gave away Gaza? All right, you know, I mean, we all know that. Why? In fact, probably one of the more interesting times ahead, one of the sons of one of the prime ministers talked to us for about an hour and 15 minutes on the reasoning behind why this movement in Israel to get rid of Gaza and maybe even the West Bank. We know it's wrong from Scripture and there's reasons for that, but it doesn't make sense, even from a humanistic thinking point of view, until you understand several things. Today there are 12 million Israelis, but the problem is that if you look at the Jewish population versus the Palestinian population, the demographics are going such that within 2010 to 2012, the break point of the number of people that are going to be non-Jewish will be enough to sway the elections. And since Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, essentially the Muslims are outbirthing everybody else. And they strongly believe that by 2020, that Israel will no longer be Jewish and would be voted out of existence by the Muslims because of the difference in birth rate. So if you look at that demographics, the whole reason why, and understand those facts, the whole reason why they got rid of Gaza, all right, was to get rid of another 2 million people who are not Jewish. I mean, there were a few communities, so, you know, several hundred, maybe about 100,000 Jewish people in some of the communities there that they forcibly removed. But the thinking behind why they get rid of Gaza is that they now have gotten rid of another 2 million Muslim people. And the demographers feel that that has bought Israel instead to be a Jewish state, not till 2020, but now till probably about 2040, 2050. All right, so it's pure demographics of why this is happening, okay? So that's the first thing that sort of changes the perspective, because I didn't understand the reasonings why, all right? So it's a pure humanistic vision of looking at the demographics of what's happening as to why they're doing this. The second thing that's happening is that was very, very interesting. If you look at Israel as a nation, I mean, it is one of the stronger nations in the Middle East. They did have troubles, if you notice, in the Lebanon War, that they went back into Lebanon, okay? I'm not sure if you know why they went into Lebanon. I think that's where we'll first start and share the understanding, my understanding. Okay, I want to be real straight. These are my views, okay? They're picked from many, many sources and many, which I believe are very accurate, but they're my views, not anyone else's. Why did Israel go into Lebanon?
To go after the Hezbollah.
Why? I want you to think. Every year for years, there have been
people being kidnapped on both sides of the border. All right? It made no sense. You know, they went into Lebanon because two little privates, you know, got kidnapped, and you know, and they had this great big war. Why? You know, it makes no sense. All right? But something else was happening. Lebanon really is two countries. Lebanon is controlled by Hezbollah and by the Christians, Christian phalangists, and part of the Druze. The Hezbollah essentially had a government within a government there and was controlling the southern part. If you understand what's coming down the horizon, all right, you'll start to understand what's happening today. Israel's faced with Iran trying to make nuclear weapons. All right, in spite of what everybody says, Iran is trying very hard to make nuclear weapons. Iran has said that they will use them against Israel to destroy Israel. Iran has also said that they will use them to destroy the United States. And in fact, most people don't understand, and most Americans don't understand, that Iran has said that they will first destroy the United States, then take Israel out. And we'll talk a little bit about why and how that will happen, how they're planning on that happening. All right, that's a shock to most Americans. So we have down here Iran. Israel knows that they have to prevent Iran from having nuclear weapons. Okay? It cannot happen. This has been known for years. Okay? Now, what's happening? They have very good intelligence. In fact, when we were briefed by Mossad, some of the people from that have been in Mossad, literally, we are within 2.5 months today, from right now, within 2.5 months of Iran being at the point where they will be self-sufficient to create their nuclear program with no more help. Right now, they still need the Russians and the North Koreans, a few other things on it. But the estimates are in 2.5 months from today, they will be self-sufficient. So there's this looming on the horizon. So what happened with Lebanon? Israel is afraid that if it goes into Iran, because they're afraid we were not going to do it, if they go after Iran, that Iran has a proxy army sitting right on their border, Hezbollah. So the idea, thinking behind going into Lebanon, was to destroy Hezbollah, put in a United Nations peacekeeping force between Hezbollah, so that when this time comes, they don't have to worry about a second front. Okay, so that's the idea behind what happened in Lebanon. Now, Israel had some troubles in Lebanon and some problems, okay, that caught them up short. And it's sort of like non-military men trying to run the war. We have our same problem with that in Lebanon years ago. I mean, you know, they had sort of those same issues. Anyhow, so that gives a perspective of what happened here. We have September 6th. Remember September 6th of this year and what happened? And nobody actually knew what happened till after the fact, all right? But essentially what happened is that Syria with North Korea and Iran, had set up a site out in a very remote part of the desert in Syria, extremely remote area, had set up a facility to make dirty nuclear weapons. Number two, to have nuclear stocks pile outside of Iran to be in case Iran gets hit destroys their nuclear program. and essentially what happened, in fact we were briefed by the general that coordinated this stuff, but bottom line is that Israel went in there with some paratroopers and some special forces, literally swiped. Literally went in there with large helicopters and special forces and literally stole the proof, maybe that's the best way to say it, of what was going on there. And then went in and destroyed all of the complex. Big, big deal, not small. The interesting thing about that, and I just will pique your curiosity for a bit, but it was hushed by the North Koreans, by the Iranians, by the Syrians, by the Israelis, and by the Americans. Nobody wanted it out. I want you to think, every time there is some kind of situation that happens in the geopolitical realm, there's always one party that wants it out. So something must have been so serious that no one wanted this out. Now it's leaking out what's happening and things are coming out. You know, the gloves are off. We're starting to get bit by bit figure out what happened. That was done, all right, for two reasons. Okay? For two reasons. Number one, Israel refuses to let Syria have the nuclear component. But that was not the big real issue. The issue that most people didn't twig to that came up was that Syria, all right, didn't even know that the Israelis had hit them until they got telephone reports on the ground. Okay? What most people don't know is that Syria spent $22 billion with a B on Russian special state-of-the-art weapons system to prevent incursion into their airspace. So bottom line, Israel told Syria, your weapon system is no good. Zip. This message was not for Syria, okay? It was for Iran. Because Iran, within 2 weeks of this event, was getting ready to spend $56 to $58 billion on the same Russian air defense system to protect Iran so that Iran's nuclear facilities would be protected. Okay? So essentially, this told the Iranians, your system is useless, we got you. You better stop. All right? That was the message, what went on with this thing here. It had little to do with Syria. All right? Now, we don't think of those ways. You know, this is the way these people think. The Syrians, all right, are scared spitless because, bottom line, their air defenses were useless, okay? But if you think the Syrians are scared spitless, the Iranians are scared double spitless. The Iranian military believes strongly that there will be an attack. They don't know when or how or why, okay? The Israelis have identified 32 sites that will have to be destroyed. Some of the thinking that have been viewed, the plan is probably to do it within 3 days, also to take out the Iranian leadership at the same time and destroy the two sites. It will have to be done several ways, okay? These sites are very some of them are in mountains. Some over in, you know, I was going to say miles of concrete. That's, you know, it's hyperbole, but very, very well protected. Some of the ideas of how they're going to do it. This is the ground, and way down here, there's a site. This is all concrete here. The United States, about a year ago, sent bunker-busting bombs, and they're going to send bunker-busting bombs in first to open up the sites. Then they're going to put nuclear weapons in to destroy the underground sites. That's kind of the thinking of what's going to go on, and it is able to be done. It's not easy, all right. They are currently training for that possible scenario, all right. Now, I want you to think some things. We've talked what's happening on our horizon right now, and this is up to date. Okay, I want you to think. Have you noticed in the last month there is this massive push? Condoleezza Rice is over there. Condi's over there. We're trying to make peace with the Palestinians. I mean, this, you know, in spite of all the things that say that can't happen, there is this massive push, all right, to make peace. All right, why? Why now? All right. You know, and people say, well, so it's, you know, in the Bush's term or whatever. You know, he wants a legacy. It's all nonsense. Why? Okay. Has to do with down here. All right. Israel knows that if they hit this, there is a risk of World War III. Okay? In fact, Bush essentially said that a couple of weeks ago. All right? What they do not want, desperately don't want, is to have the Muslim world rise up in World War III. I mean, it's a mess. All right? That's the big fear. All right? How do we prevent that?
if there can be something happen in the next couple of months to have some kind of peace potential with the Palestinians, whether it's immaterial whether it works, if it happens, or whether it does happen, or if it's going to even happen, all right? But if the Muslim world believes that that's happening, all right, they are no longer going to rise up for World War III. That's the thinking. All right? So the issue with all this peace negotiations has very little to do with peace. It has to do with this. All right? Does that make sense? What's happening? Right? We don't think the way these people think. It's not even on our radar screen. We don't even think the way they do it. One of the things that's very interesting that probably most of you don't know, in fact, most Christians don't know, and I happen to be a little bit attuned to it because of some of my family, but what's happening in Iran right now, okay, from a Christian perspective? Iran has 72 million people, all right? When the Shah left Iran, okay, I don't know if you know why the Shah left Iran. Let's go back in history. In fact, Jimmy Carter forced the Shah out of Iran, okay? Jimmy Carter didn't like the Shah. When the Shah left Iran, there were only 500 Christians in all of Iran. Only 500 Christians, okay? And Jimmy Carter essentially forced the Shah out, okay? And put in Ayatollah Khomeini. And there's this long rift between the Shiites and the Sunnis that most of you are aware of. And that was the first time that the Sunnis, which are a small percentage of Islam, who think more along radical ideas, had the first time that they had a chance to be in power. And you remember what happened during the hostage crisis and all that kind of stuff. That's all history. The important thing is that when the Shah left Iran, there were only 500 Christians. Okay? Today, as we speak, all right, right now, there are more than 600 young people, college-age students, turning to Jesus Christ per week. All right? In Iran today, there are 1 million Christians in Iran today. Of any Middle Eastern Muslim country, the highest percentage of Christians are in Iran. Number two is that these Christian brethren in Iran are spread equally around all age groups and all areas of Iran. Okay? Iran has the largest penetration of Christians of any Muslim country. That's amazing, alright? I want you to think, if you're a mullah and ayatollah over in Iran, okay? They have, I'm sure you're aware, they believe in the 12th Imam coming, this Mahdi that's going to come, and they all have these apocalyptic visions that they want to create, you know, this apocalypse to bring in, you know, Islam and world peace and all that kind of stuff, right? We're all familiar with that. I want you to think, the mullahs have this agenda, all right? They want to destroy America. America is the great Satan, remember that. Israel is the little Satan. They plan on destroying great Satan first, a shock. And we'll talk about a little bit how they plan on doing that and how they're practicing. But if you're a mullah, okay, and you realize that your college students, up until now, hey, go back to the Iranian hostage crisis and way back when the committee took over, all of the support was in the college students and the young people, all right? Remember that, you know, it was the young people, the college students, that were the supporting it. Today, only 17% of the population of Iran supports the Ayatollahs and the government. Okay. Up until 2 weeks after 9/11, we have had special forces inside Iran destabilizing Iran. There's lots going on. It's war, literally. We are literally at war. Most people don't realize that with Iran, and Iran is at war with us. I mean, they are trying to destabilize Iraq so badly so that we're bogged down there so that we don't go after it. If you look at Iran today, and I want you to think of Iran, what's happening in Iran, okay? The world's largest military base of any country, of any nation, of any area in the world today is a base in Afghanistan, okay? It sits right on the Iranian border, and it's an American base. Number two, on the other side of the border, on the other side of the country, the Americans are in Iraq. All right? The Iranians have Americans on both sides. The Americans are not, the Iranians are not stupid. They know what their plans are and what you know, that we probably will not want, you know, much for them to do those plans. The Iranians are working feverishly to get nuclear weapons because they feel that if they can get nuclear weapons, all right, we will not be able to touch them, essentially. Okay, so their whole modus operandi is to get nuclear weapons, then they're home free like North Korea, essentially. Okay. That's the kind of reality.
How are the Iranians
planning to do us in? Anybody have any idea? What?
No. Oh, they got lots of chance for terror. No.
Do they have a marking pen?
In fact, their own label. The marker. Eraser.
The eraser.
That's up on top of it, right up there.
The newest ideas. How many of you have heard of EMP, nuclear magnetic pulse theories?
The what?
EMP. Here's the ground. Here's a state. Okay? If, let's say this is the water, the ocean. Let's say this is Los Angeles. If I want to destroy Los Angeles, I can put a nuclear weapon there and destroy it. Right? What most people don't realize, in fact, this was known right after when the bombs went off in the Pacific, right when the nuclear testing was done for Hiroshima and Nagasaki. If I explode the nuclear weapon up here in the air, okay, there is a shock wave that goes out up to 500, depending on the size, to 1,000 miles, okay, 500 to 700 miles, a shock wave that literally fries every electronic circuit.
Yeah.
Okay? Right now, what the Iranians are doing is they're taking cargo ships out in the Gulf. They're shooting weapons up 50 miles up in the air and exploding them. So the feeling is that they are planning, their modus operandi is to take, you know, 200 miles offshore to international waters, explode a nuclear weapon, one on both each coast, and essentially would put North America back in the Dark Ages, all right? Because and make military very, very hard to function,
and
because
would fry our nuclear reactors, in which in turn would explode because it couldn't cool.
Yeah, essentially, it's the poor man's way to destroy us, and it takes away our edge, because our edge in military has a lot to do with electronics stuff like that. The U.S. right now, you know, we know this kind of stuff, all right? We're not, you know. Okay, I'm sorry. How are we doing time-wise? We're just about. Okay. I think we're close to that. I'm sorry.
Well, leave when you're done.
I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Miles
up. Let's go.
Okay.
It was in the air and it would fry everything.
If you look at what's happening so far as where we're headed from an Iranian perspective, what their mullahs are looking at, they are forced with American military on both sides. Number two, the estimates are, because of the way the population of the young people is turning to Jesus Christ in college students, if the present trends continue, within 10 years they will have zero power base in Iraq. So I want you to think, if you're a mullah, you are, it's push comes to shove time. This is crunch time for the mullahs, all right? It's either now, it cannot be 10 years from now. All right? And they know that. All right? So they are feverishly working at a fever pitch to bring this, their apocalyptic view of the world, and bring this thing to occur. They, They want it now. All right. I've shared with you sort of some of the reasons of what's happened and the thinking behind. All right. I've shared, hopefully, my understanding of what's what both sides are thinking on. I thought I would take a few questions.
What will happen in Israel with the Muslim population if they do, if Israel attacks the Iranian side?
Okay.
Because, like you said, it's like it's
sure.
almost 50% now.
Sure. Well, what essentially the question you're asking is the Arab population, what will how much of, you know, which much of it is Muslim? What will happen to that population if this scenario happens? Okay, there's several things you have to look at. You have to count that, separate that Muslim population into two areas: the West Bank, where most of it is, and the Gaza region. Okay. The Gaza region essentially, we might as well face it, is controlled by Hamas. It's over. That will, you know, that's controlled by Iran. There's not an awful lot can happen about, you know, we have very little input with that so far as the Israelis or the Americans. That's out of our control, and that will be against Israel no matter what. The people in the West Bank, okay, what happens to the average, you know, Israeli non-Jewish person? That population is made up of several people, classes. So it's probably 1 to 2% Christian. All right. There are about 6% of that population is Druze. Okay, the Druze are very supportive of Israel. All right, in almost everything they do. The rest of the population, it is felt in some corners that probably about 80%, 85%. I have to say, careful how I say this. It wants to be wants the benefits of Israel, does not want to go into what Gaza is like, all right? They don't love Israel, don't get me wrong. They want the benefits of Israel, and they're willing to sort of compromise or whatever, okay? But there is a small group of that, and it is increasing, right, as we talk, of more and more radicalization elements in the West Bank, much like occurred in Gaza. All right. So, the feeling is that that's probably not going to be a big issue. Okay.
Now, when we are looking at Ezekiel 30 and 39, there's going to be that battle where there will be an 85% casualty rate. This is building something that is bringing that on, and just how is that going to happen?
Okay, let's talk a little and put this all in perspective, okay? Where this fits with Ezekiel 38. An excellent question, because I haven't done that yet. If you look, in fact, something very, very interesting today, and right now, this last week, is happening on the news, okay? In fact, driving over here, they had a report on it. All of the countries listed in Ezekiel 38 are all set, except for one, Turkey. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Turkey is a country to watch. Okay? Turkey is a country. If nothing else matters, Turkey does. All right? Turkey has been rebuffed by the European Union and is currently going down a much more radicalized path. All right? That's the country to watch. Because Turkey has to change for Ezekiel 38-39 to occur. Now,
they're moving back toward the Muslims.
That's correct. Well, you know, through that kind of more of a radical philosophy. What I believe is happening today, I want you to think. Israel is being forced to go after Iran. Okay? There is no choice. There's a coming to crunch time. It has to happen. They cannot let that happen. All right? Israel's been forced to do that. What I believe the real overall geopolitical strategy, I do not believe that the going after Iran's nuclear weapons is Ezekiel 38-39. I don't believe that. But what I do believe, and strongly believe, is I want you to think what's going to happen to the world with a billion Muslims in it when Iran gets taken down. Okay? That is going to set the stage, I believe, for Ezekiel 38-39. All right, and is that clear? Okay, I do not think what we're facing right now is Ezekiel 38-39. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the neat thing for me, at least, is that you know, I kind of believe that the rapture might be before that. So. Okay, any other questions? No. Okay, I want to say thank you to all. I hope I haven't bored you.
Well, thank you very much. Now, we talked about the end time, and we've studied this chart, and I told you this the last few weeks, and we've studied some things on Sunday morning that, the last two classes that I taught on Sunday morning, the first one, within 24 hours, there was like 70 people have downloaded it already. And you know, a lot of people go and look at something on the website, but the looking is like 20 and the downloading is like 70. They're very interested. As Brother Randy gets them up there. Even the one that we did last week was, it has really popped up there. We talked about, some weird things that are happening in the last days. Weird stuff. Weird stuff beyond what we commonly think about. Brother Messick, I wanted to ask you one other thing while you were here. Now, you've got some Jewish background and history, and we've been talking about Genesis, B'nai Elohim. All right? We're talking about Genesis, the sixth chapter, and we talked about different things about it. And we looked at the two views of the faith line and then the angelic monstrosities that they come for. Can you just come up here with me for a minute and just tell me what... we haven't talked about this much, but...
Can I talk about my view of B'nai Elohim?
Yeah, just say a little bit about
sure.
that.
Okay. I have a different view of the most of B'nai Elohim. And I want you to think of what's happened with... first of all, I believe there's a Sephite views which I totally reject, and I believe in the idea that the scripture, what we've said was true, is true. I believe that the B'nai Elohim and these essentially after the on the earth before the flood that evil angels or demons or whatever they were came down and had intercourse with women of the earth and had these mighty and powerful men, whatever you want to call them. The more important thing I think we want to think of, all right, and this is a view that is very different than most, but if you look at history and time, in the Garden of Eden, Eve sinned and Adam sinned, and God said there would be a deliverer. Okay? And then, if you look through history, all along, there's points where God narrows it up and says, the deliverer is going to come through Abraham. And so all of a sudden, Satan starts, attacks there. Then it's going to come through the line of David. Okay, and attacks narrow up more. And it's going to come to, till finally, we come to the cross of Jesus Christ. All right? I want you to think, Satan, when he had Jesus Christ crucified, okay, Satan is not a stupid man. He knows the scriptures better than we do. He may not understand them. He's a very intelligent being. Satan thought that by putting Jesus Christ on the cross, he would destroy the final redemption. Okay? Here's the first insight. Number one, if you look at everything Satan does and what God does with it, Satan always tries to turn things into lemons, and God always makes lemonade out of it. The cross is classic. HaSatan wanted to destroy Jesus Christ because he knew he was the deliverer. He wanted to destroy him to destroy the plan of salvation. All right? And yet, by doing exactly what Satan did, he worked in God's plan to make it into lemonade. All right. Well, what's happening with B'nai Elohim? The same thing is happening. All right. Here, if you look before the flood, okay, God has this wide view. The deliverer is going to come up from your seed. All right? So everybody, all the population here is able to be attacked. All right? What did Satan say? Ha! Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put abnormal genes, well, not the blue kind, okay, abnormal genes into society and destroy society. In fact, if you look what God said about Noah, he said he was, quote, perfect in all his generations. And if I believe, if you look at the exegesis of that word, what it really is talking about, it's not talking that he was a good man. We think of that as a good man. But really it's saying that he had normal genes and that society had a gene pool problem. Why did God have to destroy every person on earth except eight? Okay? Why?
Because
there's a gene pool problem. All right? Now, why, if you understand, if you take that reasoning, if you come down to the children of Israel coming into the land, okay? And in fact, God says, you're going to take this tribe, you're going to destroy everyone. What kind of a God is that? I mean, let's face it, in our mind, it doesn't make sense. In fact, remember to Saul, he said, I can't destroy, I'll take the cattle and the women and the strong man. And all. You know, it didn't make sense. But what I believe was really happening is those tribes, there was a gene pool problem. Okay? And God knew this. And so he wanted this destroyed. So I look at the B'nai Elohim as more of Satan's attack as a gene pool problem on that. Now, here's the interesting thing. I want you to think. It says that as it was in the days of Noah, it will be before the Son of Man comes. Right? What is happening? What are we seeing now? Early things in our tabloids. A gene pool problem. You know? This person comes down, has intercourse with this person. You guys probably are not people that are buying those kind of magazines. It's happening today. All right? So that's my view. I'm not sure if that answers what you
said. I finished all four. I finished last week.
Okay.
Did it? Pretty much. I finished all four. I finished last week. We were even talking about, I don't want to shock somebody, I saw a Bigfoot about 20 years ago with my son. And I didn't have any room in my theology for that thing at all. It just shocked me. I went into shock and everything. But now, if this gene pool is in existence, so this is just one thing. This is nothing. I mean, I thought about this. Okay? And I said this last week, how many fingers and toes did Goliath have?
Six
fingers and six toes. According to a pretty well-documented thing, there was a man in Texas that killed a male and a female Bigfoot. Guess how many fingers and toes they had? Six fingers and six toes. Now, when I said last week that I was in shock and scared to death when I saw this thing, I felt like it was supernatural, that it was not something that I could deal with. I was a hunter and a guide in my life. I have fought bear and wild hogs just in close quarters and stuff. It wasn't anything like that. Now, this is weird, but what if this... And Chuck Missler, he said in one of his tapes, he says, there are only so many angels. How many angels and spirits did Satan take with him? One third. Thank you, brother. Also, how about if he could build up his forces? How do you think he could build up his forces?
By
the gene mutation, if we have God created man in his what? Image. And if Satan could spoil that image and infiltrate and make it in monstrosity, maybe it's already here. It just hasn't surfaced yet in the last day. I don't know. But we have, militarily, do you think we're in the lap link now that we were talking about? Now, next week we're going to go back and say, Brother David.
Do you think that this, the new studies in genetics and cloning could have something to do with this as well?
Possibly.
Your take is...
Okay. I appreciate Dr. Mincy coming here and speaking to us today. He's been up working at the heart hospital all night long. He worked in emergency over there saving people's lives. And then he stayed up all night, and so you got him. And I know his voice was a little bit weak this morning. But I really enjoyed it. Do you have any other, Brother David? You were asking me something.
I was asking you whether you thought that the genetic studies, the cloning,
we're dealing with some very spiritual issues that we don't know. What?
They're trying to play God.
Well, it and man, God. God loved mankind so much that He infiltrated the human race in the person of Jesus Christ, didn't He? Did God become flesh? John 1:1, John 1:14, John 1:18. We see this. Now, the Antichrist, Antichristos, okay? What does Antichrist mean?
Instead of.
All right. The Antichrist, in replacement of, instead of Christ, okay? Now, we had Dr. Mincy here. He studied the rabbis. You know, his family, on his wife's side and his side, they're Jewish also. They escaped out of Germany and went into Holland and you know, the World War II, pre-World War II, all that. They ended up in Canada, and now they're here. We see the end time right before us. Everybody's in the right place. We got the right problems, and it didn't happen by accident, did it? And so many of us, we just don't. He saw some things here today that you're not going to hear in the news, or even hear anyplace else, because you're not supposed to know about this. You're supposed to be sheep, just led along, and we just have at it, you know.
They talk about Hollywood bimbos.
Yeah. We are so programmed that we'll fall for anything if we're told it enough times. I try to tell you some deep things in this class. I try to get, like, Dr. Mincy to come in here. He was telling me about this, and I said, I want you to share it with my whole class, because this is where we've been. We're into some fantastic stuff. It started way back here in this period of time and in the garden. But history just repeats itself over and over, isn't it? And the one historian said, a person that doesn't know history is a fool and bound to repeat it. And so many times we do this. Politically, economically, and everything, we know which way we're supposed to go. We have enough examples in history. But you know what? We're doing it all over again. But there are powers in control that we don't understand.
Pride and greed.
Yeah, pride and greed. That's what happened in the garden.
Pride and greed.
What happened in eternity past with Lucifer? Pride and greed. What makes the evil world go round? Pride and greed. All right, so there we are. Do you have any questions before I turn you loose on the world, Brother Bill?
Jim, if I could, I'd like to add something here to that a lot of people don't understand, and I've known this since I called Milwaukee, probably 15 years. Star Wars, it actually is where we reflect the beam. Some of you may know that off of a satellite, but you don't really understand what it amounts to is that they could pick a guy out of a crowd in New York walking down the street. The reason Russia has backed off, the reason China has backed off, and you don't hear them in the news is because they know that they don't have a nuclear weapon that will clear silo before the United States can blow it up. That's what people don't know. That's the reason you don't hear anything about Russia deal. The one thing that we cannot defend against, and this I've known this for 15 years since the guy explained it to me, is exactly what he said. When they go up there and explode that bomb, you shut down your nuclear power plants, they're going to overheat, they're going to explode. Your dams don't hold the water back, and the water gets too high, what's going to happen? It's going to wreak havoc like you can't believe on the United States. this is the only thing that the United States can't defend against. Anything we can see will never clear sight of. That's the reason you don't hear Russia or China threaten us anymore. But it's the little countries like this that we're worried about, because they know as soon as they explode something up there, we've got something over there over their country. But Iran, we can't defend against.
Well, we have World War III at our doors. We have the second coming at us. You know, the one thing about us is we, as Christians, now if you're here today and you're not a Christian, you don't know the Lord, you're in a lot of danger. I'm telling you, you are in extreme danger right now.
Something else that they need to realize is this is not anything to be scared of, folks, because this, the Bible says this has to come to pass. So being scared about it or worrying about it or thinking about it, and it's not going to change anything. It has to come to pass because the Bible says it's going to come to pass. So you have to accept it and live in your faith that God is going to redeem us.
Well, I mean, everything politically that's happening in the world today, it's not all good. It's not all bad. But we just have to go along with it because that's just the way it is. What are you going to do about it, David?
Trust and obey.
That's right. Trust and obey. Brother Wally, what are you going to do?
Trust and obey. And you know another thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the rapture teaching. He said that this whole thing about the hordes coming in thing that he talked about in 38. The rapture may take place before that, and if it's as close as he says it is,
it could be right now.
I might not even get sick and have to die.
And you're going to be 83 years old pretty soon, aren't you?
You might not have to walk 20 minutes to find your car.
You may get to heaven without having to die.
Yep.
I just want to remember my way home.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoyed this. I hope it was informative to you. It's good to have you here. It's good to have the visitors in our class. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be here at 4:30 this afternoon. I'll be teaching one of the last two classes on the Jehovah's Witness doctrines and how to deal with them from the Bible, from Greek and Hebrew. Do you have any questions before I get Brother David up here? Anything else? I want to give you time to do this. All right, ask your questions. All right. Brother David?